Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and Happy New Year. We'll be talking today about your hopes for 2013. The end of 2012 saw a nation attempting to heal after a divisive year. We experienced a long and bitter presidential campaign. We witnessed horrific mass shootings in Aurora and Newtown, and the devastating Hurricane Sandy that ravaged the East Coast. So how do we move forward from here, and what can we hope for as a country, and what can we accomplish as a community? Are there changes we as individuals can take to make the world a better place in our cities and our neighborhoods, or even just on our block? And what would you like to see happen in your community? How do you hope to help make it happen? Is there something small that you could do today to make positive change or to build the society you want to be part of? We're going to make a list, a Your Call list of resolutions for community in 2013. And to help get us started, we're joined by Ethel Long Scott, who's the executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, or WEAP. And they work to change policies to raise the role and visibility of poor and working class people and to craft real solutions to the economic, social injustices of our time. Hi, Ethel.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We're also joined on the line by Mark Hertzgard, who's the environmental correspondent for The Nation and the author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. And we've also got Max Kadji, who's one of the founders of Fat Beats Produce, which is a food justice collective located in North Oakland. Fat Beats Produce aims to create a healthier, more equitable food system in North Oakland. Hi, Max.
Hey, how you all doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And we want to invite our listeners into this conversation. We're making a list of community resolutions for 2013. So what are your hopes for this year? And what do you think we can change together as a country or as a community or as a neighborhood or a city, whether it's from planting random flowers to advocating for gun control or prison reform to volunteering at your local school? How are you resolving to be a force for good in your own life this year? You can call us and join our discussion at 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free number. It's 866-798-8255. What do you want to add to our Your Call Resolutions for Change in 2013 list? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number, or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I'd like to get us started with each of you, kind of a lightning round here, to talk about one hope that you have for our country or even our planet as a whole, and then one hope that you have for our kind of immediate local community or city and how these two intersect for you. And Mark, why don't you go ahead and get us started here?
I'm happy to. I think that the big question that's facing our species and our community, for that matter, in 2013 is how quickly we can ratchet up very serious action against climate change. We saw in 2012 unprecedented extreme weather, most dramatically in the drought that ravaged the middle of the country and continues for most of the country, by the way, even though the media is not paying much attention to it any longer. And then, of course, right before the presidential election, we saw our nation's greatest city and the surrounding area of New York really punished by Hurricane Sandy. So I think it's a very opportune moment now. It is, climate change is now decisively on the public agenda, and we really need to push. And what I am hearing from activists and organizers that I've been interviewing recently is that a big push is planned for this spring to try and pressure President Obama and federal lawmakers in general to really step up to the climate crisis in a way that matches the scale of the problem. And I think in that regard, and you'll be hearing more about that within the next week or so as they roll out these plans that will build from Inauguration Day on through to Earth Day. 100 days of action are being contemplated. And I think that how that ties into California is that California has long been a real leader on climate policy in this country and on clean energy, which, of course, is the positive, economically vibrant solution to these issues. And to the extent that our example here in California can be used to show the rest of the country that getting serious about climate change by no means involves economic sacrifice, that in fact it creates economic opportunity, as we've seen here in California. I think that's a great possibility for us. And anyone who wants to get involved with that, there are 10,000 ways to do it, but all of them involve you as an individual joining with other individuals, with the other groups that are working on this, 350.org, Sierra Club, Greenpeace, et cetera, et cetera. The important thing for all of us who want to make a difference this year is to join with others who are already doing so.
And Ethel, Mark mentioned economic opportunity, and I know that that's something that a lot. Do you want to talk to us about what are your hopes for the country and the planet and what you plan to do locally?
Yeah, no, I obviously, besides echoing the things that Mark has kicked off, I would kind of just raise another piece of that in being that this is our opportunity to become really good stewards for the planet and every living thing in it, including the human beings. And I think that that means the important opportunity of beginning to put the notion of poverty elimination and health care for the 99% at the forefront of this issue. We need that discussion. We need that dialogue in our country. And after this debacle of the so-called fiscal cliff, where what I can see is that we have codified Bush-era tax cuts for the 1% at the expense of working people across this country, and that little tattered safety net that used to protect, that we used to be able to look towards to protect workers' rights has almost been set aflame. So I think that it is very crucial that we begin to look at how these issues are so integrated, and that you cannot talk about protection for, be it the children of Newton or the children of Oakland or the children across these Americas, if our people cannot unhinge ourselves from this enthronement of these corporations as they have marched against democracy. So these are the crucial issues that poor people are addressing, and I'm especially hoping that we will learn the lesson that the ruse of the middle class was really used to open that door and protect the super elite of our country. This is the opportunity that we have to educate ourselves and develop a new movement for true economic security and justice.
And Max, let me pull you into this question about your hope for 2013, your hopes. You know, obviously, food justice is a big part of economic justice and fighting global climate change.
Well, I'm just going to be blunt and think big. I'd love to see the destruction of free market capitalism.
The destruction of free market capitalism in 2013?
Hey. Yes, and, you know, the greatest resource that's taken advantage of in this country and in this world is human labor. Because without human labor, we couldn't mine all the resources, dam the rivers, plow the fields. And so once we liberate ourselves from capitalism, there's going to be huge change. But thinking locally and more for today and tomorrow, I'm looking towards land reform. There's a lot of great movements happening throughout the country and throughout the world. 2012, we saw 200 urban farmers take over a 10-acre plot of land in owned by UC Berkeley. UC Berkeley is the UC system is the largest landholder in the state of California. They took back 10 acres for production and installed a farm, and currently they're fighting to keep that land from being a Whole Foods. So, you know, I see a lot of hope for 2013 with land reform. Our organization is working in a coalition to change public policy around the way we view our parks, to install edible landscapes and to legalize fruit trees and edible parks in the city of Oakland without fences, open to the public from sunrise to sunset. So we're really looking at land reform as a big piece to connect people back to the land and to healthy foods.
Well, thank you. So speaking about this, how do you balance what one person can do? Most of you are talking about collective change. How do you balance what somebody can do right now, right here, and the need for kind of this more concerted collective action? And what's your advice on something somebody can do right now? Go ahead and start us off, Max.
Well, I think it's simple. I really love the saying my friend Gopal from Movement Generation says, it's take more land. So there's land everywhere. I mean, if you live in an apartment, there's strips of land in between the sidewalk and the street that's maintained by public works. And you can even though it's illegal, you can just plant in some cities. You can just plant a fruit tree there. You can put in a tree collard. You can plant a little garden there, you know, and water it day by day. You can scale up from there, taking lots right next to you or across the street. Oftentimes, especially in inner cities, we see absentee landlords, slum landlords that live outside of the Bay Area, and there's tons of vacant land. So you can just take land, and you can hold land for 1 to 3 to 5 years without even being noticed, and transform, you know, a lot that has garbage and all types of things you don't want to see in your community, and you can put in a garden. But what's really important is that you connect with your neighbors, because what's more important than the garden is connecting with your neighbors. So just meeting your neighbors, knowing who's around you, is going to make it more safe. It's going to keep you safe without the police, and it's going to help beautify your neighborhood. Because once you initiate a change right next to you or across the street, and other people see that, and you're open and you're sharing with them, it's going to inspire other people to do the same.
All right, and that's Max Kadji. He's one of the founders of Fat Beats Produce, which is a food justice collective in North Oakland. And so his individual activism that you can do right now, ideas are plant something on a vacant piece of land and connect with your neighbors. How about you, Ethel?
I think that in addition to the things that he indicated, every form of not only resistance, but the process of opening our minds to the idea that, you know, we get these scarcity discussions where we're lied to and told there's not enough money to do things. We know that that is absolutely not the case, be it from land, but also to finances. And when we look at things like Wall Street and the phenomenal amounts of money that have been accumulated and that are directed against our interests as working people, something small like that financial transaction tax, which would tax the transactions. It's not even a new idea. It's been around since the old Roosevelt days. But we need it applied today, because we especially then get to turn our attention. So the first step is first educating ourselves about the lie that there's not enough money. There's a lot of money available, but it's not directed towards us, our community, and our needs. And that we then have to also begin to inform ourselves about how have we been able to make changes in other periods, and how do individuals relate to the process and development of social movements. So I think this question of looking at the urgency of new ways that we need to reapply these things, and thirdly, that we can no longer hold ourselves shackled to these two parties who, in my opinion, in Congress have just shown that every step along the way that they will uphold the desires and interests of these corporations. We need to really understand it's urgent. They need to be dethroned, and our democracy needs to be advanced. That's the only way we can protect ourselves, our community, and begin to consider the positive kind of proposals that Max and others are discussing.
And Mark, let me go to you on this question about how you balance what some one person can do in the right here or the right now with the need for concerted collective action. So I want to ask you that. And I also want to ask you if you think that there's something that has changed in 2013 that gives us greater opportunity to make these changes now.
Well, I'm going to make a suggestion that maybe sounds almost quaint, which is read a book. Read a book. Turn off the television. And this gets a little bit to Ethel's point about trying to, we need to have larger and deeper understanding about our circumstances than we get from the constant barrage of short internet mediated so-called news and information. And I think that just turning off the television and reading a book, or reading a thoughtful magazine such as The Nation or Mother Jones or The Atlantic or others that deal with these questions of, that you're discussing this morning on this show. How do you make change? Where do we find ourselves in history? It's always important when you're trying to figure out how to move forward to understand where you are. And it's very difficult to understand where you are if you don't have a sense of history. And you can't get that from a 200-word blog post. I'm sorry. So I hope, and of course I'm a little biased here because I write books, I suppose, but I think that is one very helpful suggestion. And then as far as how that connects, well, one of the things you learn from reading books and social history and all of that is that you never get very far with just individual actions. You've got to join together, because the powers that be that uphold the status quo, they certainly work together. And the only way to overcome them is with organized people with a strong strategy for change. And so I think that that's really the largest goal that we can have this year. As far as how things have changed in 2013, I think that we have to understand that there were a lot of good things that happened in 2012 as well. Look at what happened with the labor movement and the usage of strikes. There's a very good piece, for example, that's been written on Alternet that just goes back and reviews how many workers previously overlooked and frankly unorganized workers took it upon themselves in 2012 to strike against Walmart, for example, the strike in the Chicago Teachers Union, the strikes at in Long Beach Port, in Los Angeles International Airport. You know, these are really important struggles that suggest that there is far more appetite for challenging the status quo than you're ever going to hear from the mainstream media. So I think that there's a lot of opportunities here. And let's remember, too, that the forces of utter darkness were defeated in November. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and the whole Tea Party analysis of American politics was decisively rejected by the American people. And that creates an opportunity for further progress.
And that's Mark Hertzgard. He's the environmental correspondent for The Nation magazine and the author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. I'm joined by Ethel Long Scott, who's the executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project, and Max Kaji, who's one of the founders of Fat Beats Produce, which is a food justice collective in North Oakland. And we're talking about our community resolutions, our resolutions for affecting change at the local, national, state, and international level. And what can we as individuals do both to illuminate the collective and to take action that we can make our world a better place? Let's go to Roger in San Francisco, and then I'll read a couple of emails. Hi, Roger.
Yes, thank you, Holly. I just want to wish everyone a happy new year. What I'm going to talk about just briefly is kind of somber for this area, but it really has to be talked about, I believe. The board at the Golden Gate Bridge supports a suicide fence. What's been holding it back is just simply money, is my understanding. Now, people out there are interested in stopping this tragedy occurring every year. And I think you have to remember that the people who jump off that bridge are vast majority mentally ill. So I think as a people, we have a responsibility to try to protect them. Now, if you want to get involved in this effort, if you go on your computer and look up Golden Gate Bridge suicide, you will find groups that will you can work with to raise the money to put up this net. You know, when I became involved with this, it was just less than 1,000 jumpers. Now it's they admit 1,500, but truthfully, it's well over 2,000. And it's just making this area a suicide mecca is simply wrong. This is a beautiful city with very compassionate people. And it just has to end.
All right. Thank you, Roger. We'll add that to our community resolutions list for 2013. And we have this email from Denise in San Francisco. I'd like to see a note in every PG&E building, as well as every municipality, finding a way to inform drivers to quit idling their cars when waiting for someone or picking someone up. This especially applies to van services. The waste of fuel and pollution is incalculable. And let's go to Ed from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ed. Welcome to your call.
Hi, thanks, Holly. I wanted to suggest something that will overcome the problem that we face by the fact that we never get to confront our office holders in public. We can't hold them accountable. There's no forum. There's no way. I mean, well, there's press conferences, but those are usually corporate, journalists who are selected first, and they get to ask 15 seconds for a question, and this office holder gets 15 minutes to spin the answer. And the same thing at the town hall meetings. What we need is real dialogue back and forth, an actual conversation. So my suggestion is this, that we, by a constitutional amendment, require all federal, state, and local office holders to step forward every 30 days on television across the table from a citizen or that citizen's appointed proxy spokesperson. Like if you wanted to appoint Rush Limbaugh to talk for you, you could do that, or Noam Chomsky, or Medea Benjamin, whoever. Think of the quality of the dialogue that we could get and the quality of the education of, for all of us. We all need to know what in the world is going on, and the way to do that is to participate by listening to these conversations, and we'll all start to understand better what's going on, and the office holder can be embarrassed into doing the right thing.
So let me put that to our panel. Thank you, Ed. What do you think about this in terms of holding politicians accountable and getting more public dialogue that isn't about lobbyists having access, but people getting to talk directly with politicians who hold the levers of power?
I would say, pardon me, as one of the journalists here on the panel, the first thing I thought of, I think it's an admirable idea, and there's actually already some office holders who do that. The one who springs to mind is Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont, the one self-avowed socialist in the United States Congress. And, Sanders has been going around Vermont holding those kinds of town meetings throughout his tenure as senator, and it explains why Bernie Sanders is able to get reelected very handily every time he runs for election, why he's very popular, because he actually goes out and talks to citizens and listens to citizens. I empathize with the caller's desire to embarrass public officials, but you know, there's also it doesn't always have to be a negative interchange, as the thing with Saunders shows. You know, there's a way that they are supposed to be public servants, let's remember. But a public servant to take his or her responsibility seriously does need that kind of interaction. And that's what Bernie Sanders has been doing. And I think it'd be a great idea. I'm not sure about the constitutional amendment to force that. I think there's probably easier and quicker ways to accomplish it.
And we have an email from Caroline saying that she hopes that politicians will stop taking money from the NRA. We have about a minute until we go to a break. I wonder if anybody wants to comment on that in terms of holding politicians accountable.
Well, I think the issue that's actually really connected between what she's raising and that what the earlier caller raised is that we've got to think about citizen empowerment and citizen involvement as the extension, the continuation of the democracy process, not just pulling the lever and getting the most popular gal or guy who promises us the moon and then gets in and delivers to another grouping. I think we're really talking about we have to be both informed, and we need the kinds of examples like they did in Occupy, where there was constantly elevating a restructuring of what the problems are that we see and new solutions. That means we as citizen X, Y, or Z have to put forward what we see necessary to defend workers' rights, to protect the environment of the planet, but also the environment for the least amongst us.
Ethel Long Scott is the executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. We're also speaking with Mark Hertzgard, who's the environmental correspondent for The Nation and the author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. We're also joined by Max Kadji of Fat Beats Produce. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that depends and relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you will also find links related to today's program. And that's also where you can sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can listen to past shows and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll ask, can video games be a force for good? How can video games educate and enlighten us? And what's the social responsibility of this $65 billion industry? Today, we're having a conversation about our hopes for the new year. What can you do to change your community for the better? You can join our conversation at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. From hiring somebody looking for work to advocating for prison reform or more funding for public education to mentoring a young person or volunteering at your community garden, how are you resolving to be a force for good in your own neighborhood and for our planet? Give us a call at 866-798-8255. Or you can email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. What's one small thing you can do to make your neighborhood a better place? And what do you want to add to our Your Call resolutions for change in 2013? We're making a list, so you can call us at 866-798-8255. Is there a suggestion that you have for us on a small change that an individual can make to make the world a better place this year in 2013? 866-798-8255. And I wanted to read John Carroll in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday had his New Year's resolutions for you. Don't run your boat into an iceberg is one of them. Let bygones be bygones and share less on Facebook, which gets back to what some of you were talking about read a book and go a little deeper. I'm going to ask you to go a little deeper here, Mark, talk about, you know, we're talking about kind of what the hopes that we have for 2013. And I'm wondering if that's a word that you think is a useful word for us to be using. And can you just talk a little bit about what's, you know, rational and realistic goals? What's optimism and how do we balance that in terms of practical change?
Sure. I think hope is the essential word for anyone who is serious about making our world a better place. It's very easy to look around and see all that's wrong with the world, and it's a lot more important, but also challenging at times, to see how much good there is in the world and how that good can be built on to create that better world. And especially at moments like this, and in particular on the issue that I report on most closely, climate change, it's very hard at times to be hopeful. And yet, I always think back to a lesson that I learned from Václav Havel when I was traveling around the world in the 1990s to write a book on the environmental future of our species. And I interviewed Mr. Havel shortly after he had become president of Czechoslovakia. And, of course, Havel had, prior to that, been a political dissident who was thrown into jail in the 1980s when Czechoslovakia was still part of the Soviet Empire. And it was an interesting story that Havel told. He'd written about it in his book. And people who want to really be inspired for political change, I highly recommend Havel's books, including the book Living in Hope. And he talked about the difference between hope and optimism. And optimism is a kind of a rational calculus of what is likely to happen, whereas hope is an active verb. It is an affirmative belief that you can change what happens. And this came up in Havel's life when he was about to attend a political demonstration in Prague that the other famed Czech novelist, Milan Kundera, told him, no, don't do that. You're going to get thrown in jail, and it's not worth it, because Havel was going to go stand up for this rock and roll band, this sort of like Frank Zappa wannabe rock and roll band that was about to be arrested. And Havel said, no, I'm going to go do it. And sure enough, Havel did get thrown in jail, and he ended up being in jail for 4 years of solitary confinement. And he did that because he felt that it was important. And when he was asked about it later, he said, well, you know, if you stand around and think, is this action ever going to lead to real change, and you try to debate it back and forth, you know, the rational calculus may tell you, no, don't take this action, because it's not very likely to lead to change. But the one thing we know, Havel concluded, is that if we don't act, there will be no change. So you must have the courage of your convictions and hold firmly to hope. And of course, Pavel spent 4 years in solitary confinement in the 1980s under the Soviet Empire. But by the end of the decade, he had led the Velvet Revolution and was in the palace as president of a free nation of Czechoslovakia. And he himself said that his own story was echoed and indeed amplified by the example of Nelson Mandela, who went into jail in 1962 at a time that no one thought that apartheid would fall in South Africa, just as no one thought the Soviet Empire would fall. And those freedom fighters of Mandela and Havel and many others whose names we all don't know because they never got famous, those are the people who show you what hope can do, and you must believe in hope. That is what will drive us forward.
And Ethel, do you want to mention some people who inspire you when you're looking at change and activism?
Absolutely. I think that the idea of hope, I would probably add the notion of vision. And again, if we kind of look at that, at the most recent labor movement and some of the big fights that have gone on in the Rust Belt of America, and people without big names who have not only fought against efforts to establish a right to work in a state that was the birth of a labor movement in America, like Michigan, but who also have fought against huge efforts to establish a financial dictatorship in what's known as the Public Act for small, little people in small towns and big towns in Detroit, to smaller areas, Flint and others, have really elevated that, no, we reject the effort to impose a process where elected officials are relegated to zero and some corporate entity is elevated to the top. However, those kinds of small stories are not what are reaching big America. People like Rachel Maddow, other folks have written about it. But had it not been for those dedicated efforts, not only to the notion of hope and democracy, but a vision of, you know, this little small thing of an America that is beyond capitalism, because it's actually being destroyed. And what in the world, how are we going to take care of our people if we stay within this market confines? There are millions of Americans who are grappling with that discussion, not just Americans, millions of human beings who are grappling with that discussion every day. And one of the things that we need, and what I love the Occupy movement for doing, one of the things, it didn't elevate individuals, it elevated liberating thoughts. It elevated the notion of reading books, of investigating our circumstances. And I think there are many lessons we can take from that, but that idea that without a vision, the people will perish, I would think that we need to, that the example that Mark gave was also a person who had the idea of a vision. We need a broader vision of society that takes care of all the people, that doesn't throw away people to ensure that a few people can live like kings and queens.
So you brought up Occupy and the 99% and the fact that we have seen a huge increase in the wealth gap and the income gap over the past three decades or so. What can people do about something that's so big like that? I mean, what can an individual do about something as huge as alleviating poverty, Ethel?
Well, I think the big part is that if anybody can tell me what of the elected representatives even had that in their conversation. The only ones I know of were the third-party people and the question of poverty elimination, not getting rid of the poor, running them into the ground, but rather this addressing ourselves with this poverty-wealth gap and redirecting the resources in a way that can begin to heal our people and our country and indeed our planet. That's a different vision of how we might apply the human resources that we are developing, and it is timely. It is timely that we have that. It's as timely as the notion of abolishing slavery to elevating the rights of women to vote, et cetera, et cetera. This idea, some of them are old ideas, but they are still far from what is the reality for the great majority of us. I think that these are, frequently we're miseducated to believe, oh, that's somebody else's problem, be it 500 murders in Chicago to the very important kinds of things that have happened in Newton. But they're connected to this history of militarization of our society and genocide against different people. I know that I'm saying a theme of we have to educate ourselves, but I believe that we have to educate ourselves so that we can liberate ourselves. Because until we can do that, we are subject to being at the whims of the NRA, who their vision is arm every, well, God, there's enough guns to, more than enough guns to arm everybody, and then just, I guess, have a full-out shootout between different groupings. That's not the vision of peace. That's not the vision of applying the resources. So they really are coming to terms with the idea that this wealth-poverty gap is actually forcing different kind of political groupings to organize in a different way. And it is urgent that we educate ourselves and insert ourselves in terms of new discussions and new ideas forward in this. That's a big, big part. And you know what, Holly? That discussion is going on more than credit is given for, but most of the elected officials will not touch that with a 10-foot pole because that is not how they are elected.
And that's Ethel Long Scott. She's the executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm inviting you to join our discussion about community resolutions for 2013. What are concrete ways that we as individuals can make change, whether it's on an individual level by joining a community garden or at a collective level by getting involved in a movement? 866-798-8255 is the toll-free number. I'll get to your calls in just a minute. 866-798-8255. And what questions do you have for us in framing this discussion about ways individuals can affect change? What are your hopes for this year? And what do you think we can change together as a country or a community or a neighborhood? Whether it's planting random flowers or volunteering at your local school, are you resolving to do something good in your own life this year? 866-798-8255 is the toll-free number. Or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I'll get to a couple of those calls in just a second. You have each brought up in different ways this idea of citizen versus consumer, and I think that it would be really interesting to hear how you think about those two concepts and the power that we have as consumers actually to affect change. Yesterday in another paper about resolutions, Lindsay Cromwell Kalkbrenner said, spend your time doing things with people instead of buying energy-sucking, land-filling bound gifts. And that was one idea for a resolution. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on this question of consumer versus sort of citizenship. Go ahead, Max. Why don't you start us off?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I think a big piece is switching from consumer to the idea of being consumer to the idea of being a producer. I mean, there's a huge DIY, do-it-yourself movement, you know, building things, fixing your own cars, making your own preserves. for thousands of years, humans have done it themselves. They've, you know, made their own pickles. They've kept their own animals to raise their own eggs, and I think when we switch from, if we don't have a big backyard, we can switch mentally from being a consumer of only consuming items to a producer, thinking, what can we share with our neighbors? What can we grow in our front yard? What can we do with, you know, things we get for free on Craigslist? And so I think really what it comes down to is that mental shift of thinking yourself less as a consumer and more of a producer. And you can be a producer of ideas by being a writer or, you know, just sharing what you have, your knowledge and your skills. And I think that's a huge change when people see that, and I think that's a great way to affect capitalism is to undermine it by becoming your own producer.
Mark, why don't I pull you into that discussion as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's also because it's such a consumerist society that we live in, for many people, that's going to be where they start on their journey towards a more socially aware and socially impactful existence. So for some people, for example, on the environmental front, for some people, the way they can get started on confronting climate change, for example, is by changing their personal consumer choices to eat less meat, for example, or to ride the bus rather than take their private automobile, to change out their light bulbs in their house for more energy-efficient light bulbs and such. And that is those are important steps as long as they are not the end of the journey, as long as they're the first steps. And so for a lot of people, that's going to be where they begin, and that's fine. What we want is for people to begin. That's the hardest and the most important, is to begin. Because once you do, and you learn that, wow, this feels good, or, you know, as was just said, you know, if you begin to grow your own food and you begin to chat with your neighbors and you realize, wow, and you turn off the television and you read a book, you feel better about yourself, you feel better about your community, and you see that there's an awful lot more opportunity to change the world, and that it doesn't have to be this dreary, difficult, sacrificial option, but rather something that is liberating and community building and fun, then I think that it's really, you're on the road and you're not likely to turn back.
And we've got an email from Michelle. She says, plant fruit trees this Arbor Day. Government on all levels support this effort for one day. It addresses global warming, food justice, GMOs, and terrorism. Additionally, addresses empowerment, preventative help, and surplus powerlessness, i.e. apathy. And let's hear from Vivian in Berkeley. Hi, Vivian. Welcome to your call. Oh, bye, Vivian. All right, let's go to William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Are we having phone problems again, my friends? William in Belvedere, are you with us? I think we're having some phone issues. Welcome to KALW 2013. Mark, you wrote something about Hurricane Sandy last year. It was a Nation article called Hurricane Sandy is a Greek Tragedy, and you wrote, Sandy is short for Cassandra, the Greek mythological figure whose warnings about the future were fated to be ignored. But America might still avoid Cassandra's curse if its citizens break the stranglehold that big oil exercises over their government in Washington. So can you talk about that? Sandy is a Greek tragedy, and how that can translate into political action?
Yeah, let's talk about the last part of it, which is breaking the stranglehold, because that's really what we're here today to discuss. And one of the really exciting and somewhat controversial tactics that's been rolled out since then is this divestment campaign that Bill McKibben and the folks at 350.org have begun right after the November elections, to basically identify big oil as public enemy number one in the fight against climate change. And what that means in terms of action is that trying to get especially colleges and pension, labor union pension funds, and government investments out of ExxonMobil, Peabody Coal, et cetera. So this divestment campaign, which, by the way, they're modeling it very, very loosely on the divestment campaign of the 1980s, which helped to drive the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. The idea is to not just to hurt the bottom line of Exxon, but in particular to shame them publicly, to put them on the spot, and in very similar ways to what happened with the tobacco industry. Once we knew that cigarettes were killing people and the tobacco companies were still selling them and still trying to get advertisement in the public airwaves and so forth, and by politicians, that the shaming of tobacco got to a point where not only did people as individual consumers stop smoking cigarettes so much, but it became uncool socially and culturally to smoke. And people who came out of college and graduate schools of business did not want to work for Philip Morris, did not want to work for the tobacco companies because they'd be embarrassed to do it. That's the larger goal of this effort led by 350.org and others to divest from the fossil fuel companies. And they've already got, I think last count was over 150 colleges and universities across the United States are promising to divest from their endowments any stock holdings in fossil fuel companies. And significantly, the city of Seattle has now become the first city government to make this same kind of pledge. So we'll see if that builds momentum coming into the spring. And as I mentioned earlier in this program, there will be 100 days of action beginning with Inauguration Day to put public officials, and in particular President Obama, under pressure to step up to the climate crisis in a serious way.
And that's Mark Hertzgard. He is the environmental correspondent for The Nation magazine and author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Cronin, and let's try and go back to the phone lines. Linda in Capitola, welcome to Your Call.
Hi, thank you for letting me on your show. I want to hail Ethel and her remembering to give us that word vision and visioning. And I want to add to that, there's a do-it-yourself movement in this country, and that movement is in a large way being led by the poor people who are already being spit out of this dysfunctional mainstream, and it frees them from other things too, like the fear that that's going to happen. They have more energy in that sense. But there's a movement, Food Not Bombs is an example, the free school is an example. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that your caller Ed was talking about, do-it-yourself democracy. And best of all, if we do our own visioning, if people get together and create their visioning together some more, then all of this bullshit that's keeping most people afraid is going to just dissolve.
Well, thank you very much for that, Linda, just for FCC regulations. I'm gonna cut you off there. She brought up this idea of vision, Ethel, and you just had the U.S. Courts on Women Poverty last May, I think it was. Can you just talk to us about what came out of that and some of the opportunities that you found in having those discussions?
Yeah, I think that the crucial part that we were trying to unpack was this notion that we are dealing with a changing world, and part of that is that this old system of wage labor is being destroyed, and human life is being cheapened. When we think about people being consumers, billions of human beings on this planet are already locked out of that process. And so many people, their starting point is, well, how do we all become entrepreneurs and get them, quote-unquote, engaged? That ship has sailed. And I think that some of the examples that the other panelists have shared are really much more along the lines of how do we begin to reconstruct a society where we address those kinds of problems. In the context of the courts last year, we were focused on raising this dirty little secret that there are millions that are in poverty in our country, and they are structurally impoverished, and the numbers are growing. Some of them are worked in some of the old manufacturing legacy industries. Some are new workers who are contingency workers, the only work they can get. They're becoming a new class of poor. And we try to figure out how can we begin to disavow the global elite from pitting, from winning this race of pitting us in this fight of the race for the bottom. How do we get this notion of, for instance, jobs, poverty, immigration? How do we begin to look at what is actually happening in all of those areas is impacting us? Now, we came out with five resolutions of action.
Can you go kind of quickly? Because I want to get to one more caller before
okay.
we end.
So we came out with five resolutions of action just as a starting point that might begin to elevate these issues, from turning our attention to Wall Street to turning our attention to health care for the 99%. But at the heart of it was that the poor have to be not only in the driver's seat, but reconstructing what this new vision needs to look like.
All right, and let's go to Mark in Oakland. Mark, welcome to your call.
Thank you. Happy New Year. My idea is that if everybody would just leave their house 5 or 10 minutes early in the morning, then we'd just be a little more gentle towards each other. Isn't that really what we want on this planet? It's like not to be so competitive and just have a few more minutes, less accidents, you'll be more friendly. It's a simple idea. It wouldn't cost anything. It doesn't have a political agenda, and that's my idea.
So just not to be quite as rushed and to be a little more gentle with each other.
Everybody leaves the house. They're late. They're in a hurry. If everybody would just say, look, I need to leave the house at 10 till 7 instead of 7. I think we'd have a nicer world.
All right, so let me put that to our panel. We're running out of time, so I want you each to be brief. So what's one thing that you'd like to ask our listeners to do in 2013 to make the world a little bit better? Go ahead. You can start with Ethel.
Yeah. Every week I'll talk to a new person about what kind of society we need in order that all people could live lives with dignity.
Nice. Max.
I would say educate yourself about the Farm Bill and about food subsidies, because there's plenty out there for all of us, and obesity is killing ourselves and our children. And if we just educate ourselves about the Farm Bill, it's really important to understand corn and soy, what it does to us. I think we can make a huge change through education and then advocacy.
And Max, just quickly, if somebody wants to join a community garden or plant a median strip, what's your advice to them?
Well, community gardens, most of them in Oakland are full. I'd say start your own. There's a lot of lots around there, and there's lots of organizations that will help support you if you want to take a lot.
And we'll put a list of those organizations at yourcallradio.org. Mark, we're going to give you the last word. What is your advice for our listeners right now?
Every day, try to remember what the climate crisis means for our children and our young people, and resolve to do one thing every day about it, whether it be in your personal life or, as I would hope, getting involved with the activists who are already pushing on this stuff. And those of you who are parents or grandparents, I invite you to join the group Climate Parents, who are pushing on this to try to create a world that will be livable for our kids in the face of climate change.
And we'll put links to all of this information from our guests at yourcallradio.org. I want to thank Mark Hertzgard, who's the environmental correspondent for The Nation and the author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. Also thanks to Ethel Long Scott, who's the executive director of the Women's Economic Agenda Project. They work to change policies to raise the role and visibility of the poor and working class people and crafting real solutions to economic, social justice injustices in our time. And we'll put a link to all of that information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks also to Max Kadji, who's one of the founders of Fat Beats Produce, which is a food justice collective located in North Oakland. Again, we'll have all of those resources at our website, yourcallradio.org. And you can also post comments and continue this conversation there. Thanks to everybody who joined us, and I apologize that we couldn't get to all of your emails and calls. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. Can video games be a force for good? On the Next Year Call, we'll look at the ways video games are being used to educate and enlighten, and how those efforts relate to the $65 billion gaming industry. What's the social responsibility of game companies? And what can be changed in terms of equality and fair representation in the gaming world? Join the conversation at 10 or email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. What have you gained from gaming, and what would you like to see in the future? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.